Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. So before I start, I wanted to thank all the devotees for giving me the opportunity to speak on the topics of Krishna consciousness. This is very beneficial for me. And especially I want to thank His Grace Swabhas Prabhu, who is upstairs. And as many of you know, he's temple president of this temple and the community, which is quite large, consisting of a few hundred members. And maybe not many of you know that he's not only leader of the community, but he is the longest standing temple president in ISKCON, not only in America, but worldwide. And we have more than 500 temples and centers at the moment, so very special person, and we're very fortunate to have his association. He's up there blessing all of us from above. Hare Krishna. So with all of your blessings, I wanted to read from Bhagavad Gita, chapter 9, which is the most confidential knowledge. And we will read we will read text 32. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. So Sanskrit of the text goes as follows. Mam hi partha vyapashtitya yepi syupa payoneha striyo vaishyastatha shudras te piyanti paramgatim. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. O son of Pritha, those who take shelter of me, though they be of lower birth, women, Vaishyas, merchants, and Shudras workers, can attain the supreme destination. Purport. It is clearly declared here by the Supreme Lord that in devotional service there is no distinction between the lower and higher classes of people. In the material conception of life, there are such divisions, but for a person engaged in transcendental devotional service to the Lord, there are not. Everyone is eligible for the supreme destination. In the Srimad Bhagavatam 2.4.18, it is stated that even the lowest, who are called chandalas, dog eaters, can be purified by association with a pure devotee. Therefore, devotional service and the guidance of a pure devotee are so strong that there is no discrimination between the lower and higher classes of man. Anyone can take to it. The most simple man taking shelter of the pure devotee can be purified by proper guidance. According to the different modes of material nature, men are classified in the mode of goodness, brahmanas, the mode of passion, kshatriyas, or administrators, the mixed modes of passion and ignorance, vaishyas, or merchants, and the mode of ignorance, shudras, or workers. Those lower than them are called chandalas, and they are born in sinful families. Generally, the association of those born in sinful families is not accepted by the higher classes. But the process of devotional service is so strong that the pure devotee of the Supreme Lord can enable people of all the lower classes to attain the highest perfection of life. This is possible only when one takes shelter of Krishna. As indicated here by the word yapashritya, one has to take shelter completely of Krishna. Then one can become much greater than great jnanis and yogis. Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jai. O son of Prita, those who take shelter of me, though they be of lower birth, women, vaishyas, merchants, and shudras, workers, can attain the supreme destination. So, there are a couple of reasons why I wanted to speak on this particular verse. Firstly, a few days ago I've been to Austin, Texas, and a few devotees there wanted me to speak on the subject of Russia becoming Krishna conscious gradually. And interesting that in here the same interest was expressed. And oftentimes I'm thinking about myself that, you know, I'm not born in Krishna consciousness, I'm not born in this culture, and we have number of people here who are born, especially those who are of Indian origin. And for me to speak on these subjects would be very strange and a little bit unnatural. So how can I inspire anyone? But I was thinking that I can still inspire in the same way as, you know, little children can be inspired in the circus when they see bear riding on a bicycle. You know, if you go to the circus, sometimes you can see bear riding on the bicycle. And mothers can tell their children, look, even bear can ride on the bicycle. Why can't you? So, you know, if Russian can speak on the subjects of Krishna consciousness, that means anyone can do so, right? So, anyway, it is an interesting phenomena, you know, that related to the subject matter discussed in this particular verse and purport. It is stated that anyone, even coming from very low background, can become perfect, which is very inspiring, especially for myself. I was not only born in former Soviet Union, which was completely godless communist country for many years, for 70 years. On the top of that, I was born in Muslim family, which is, you know, even worse, you can say. This is something which is very encouraging for me personally, that, you know, anyone can achieve the supreme perfection. And certainly we can say that there is a lot of mercy coming from the Lord. And of course, one interesting phenomenon is that people from former Soviet Union, you know, Russian-speaking people, they, for some reason, unknown reason, are very enthusiastic about Krishna consciousness. Myself, I traveled around 20-plus countries outside of Soviet Union in the past couple of years, and I cannot really even name one country where I couldn't find, you know, large group of Russian people practicing Krishna consciousness. Now, I think there is one, yeah, there is only one place, and that is Fiji. So Russians haven't made there yet. So it's pretty remote part of the world. But everywhere else, certainly there are big groups of Russian people who are very enthusiastic about Krishna consciousness. And certainly, this enthusiasm sprouted or was perhaps inspired by certain restrictions which were enforced in communist era in former Soviet Union. As probably many of you know, that all the spiritual and religious movements were heavily persecuted, and especially Krishna consciousness was heavily persecuted in Russia. There is even one book available now about history of Soviet Union in those days, devotional history. It's called Salted Bread. Many devotees were imprisoned, and when I joined, devotees just came out of the prison. Actually, I was looking for devotees. I couldn't find them because most of them were in prison. And, you know, the rest, few who were remaining free, they were so much on the ground that you couldn't even, you know, see them. When I saw first person on the street wearing neck beads, I recognized that this is a devotee. I was very happy. But when I came to him, I told him Hare Krishna. He got so scared. He thought, I'm a KGB agent. But then he realized that I'm not. And so from there onwards, I started getting actively involved in the movement. It is very interesting. It was very interesting to see how Krishna consciousness is developing in those days. You know, sometimes we may ask ourselves question that, you know, why Krishna is allowing us to go through certain difficulties or challenges in life. If he should be taking care of us. This, and you know, because we are chanting Hare Krishna, trying to serve him, and certainly this question would be very relevant at those days when many devotees were imprisoned and persecuted. And I know the history of the place where I joined. It was Georgia, and the city was called Suhumi, and actually most of the devotees were taken to the court, and they had quite long sentences in prison. They had to serve long years in prison. It is interesting, you know, what was my initial interest in connecting with Krishna consciousness, because my family was very much anti-communist family, because they suffered a lot in communist era, and I was young, and I decided if communism is such a terrible evil, I have to dedicate my life to uproot it, and I may die or be imprisoned, but it doesn't matter. But you know, I wanted to dedicate my life to something serious. So, anyway, and I was involved in that, you know, propaganda work for some time. A few times I got nearly imprisoned just for political purposes. And when finally they decided that they had enough of me and they wanted to actually, you know, like put me in prison, communism was finished. Gorbachev came in power and he cancelled the whole system. And I couldn't figure out why this happened. Because communism was developing so well, so successfully, and it was spreading more and more. And of course it was Krishna's plan, as one of our senior devotees, Japataka Swami Maharaj, is mentioning, that it's not by chance that the name of this man was Gorbachev. So he was empowered by Gaur, Lord Gauranga, to finish the whole communist system. But later, when I already joined the movement and I started reading Prabhupada's biography, Prabhupada Lilamrita, and it became clear that it was initiated by Srila Prabhupada, the whole downfall of communist system. Because when he came in 1972 in Moscow, he looked at people, kind of analyzed the situation, and people at that time, you know, like everything in country was gray. You know, there were gray buildings, people were wearing gray clothes, and, you know, like everything was gray. So it was very depressing, and people were, you know, also very depressed. And he looked at the people and he said, people are not happy in this country. And then he said, how can ever people be happy without God? You know, because everything connected with God is forbidden in this country, so everyone is so depressed. And then he thought for a moment, and then he said, but when people of this country will start chanting Hare Krishna, communism will be finished. And this is what happened. Actually, communism met its end just because more and more people in the country were chanting Hare Krishna. So, and Krishna had this plan. But of course, I was really puzzled at the moment, you know, because I had some cause in my life. I had some life enemy, and then all of a sudden everything was finished. You know, my enemy disappeared, and I had nothing to do. I thought, okay, what's going on? And then I came across devotees. But initially, my desire to connect with devotees was inspired by the fact that they were persecuted by communists. And I wanted to network with all the persecuted groups to join forces like that. And I was thinking I should definitely, because amongst all the groups, communists hated devotees more than anybody else. And they were writing so much, you know, like pamphlets and so many articles and producing so many shows just to, you know, kind of present devotees in a very bad light. And I was thinking, you know, communists, they really hate these people. That's why these people must be the best of all. You know how it works, that enemy of my enemy is my friend. So I wanted to connect with devotees. And of course, when I started associating with devotees, I realized that devotees are truly the best people of all. No doubt. And nevertheless, it's interesting that when devotees were prosecuted in that city where I joined, and there were quite many of them in the same court case, and actually the high court judge of the city himself was dealing with their case. Because it was so serious, you know, it was directly connected with KGB. It was considered to be government crime, not just some crime, but, you know, because, I mean, you read Prabhupada books, he tells that clear in black and white, that describes communists as demons. So naturally, you know, they were very upset about the movement. And so the judge had to deal with all the cases of devotees, and you know, he had to work very hard, you know, kind of analyzing all the evidences and putting it all together. And he had to work not only in his office, but he had to take papers home also. And you know, main evidences were Prabhupada books. And he had a son who was a solicitor. And so he was bringing these Prabhupada books home, and, you know, he actually kept these books at home. And his son took interest. You know, he was thinking, what is that case my father is dealing with, and what are these strange books about? So he started reading Prabhupada's books. And when he read Prabhupada's books, he decided that these are the best books I ever read. And this is something I was always looking for. And so he connected with devotees, he learned more about devotional practices, and he started following four regulative principles and chanting Hare Krishna, and on the top he started preaching about Krishna consciousness. And of course by that time, you know, his father already imprisoned all the devotees, but when he learned that his own son, and you can imagine, you know, like high court judge, very prominent position in the city, and his own son became, you know, like those whom he just imprisoned. And so it was like great embarrassment for him. Of course, he couldn't imprison his own son. He didn't want to do that, but he was saying, please stop that. You're giving me such a bad name. But his son was adamant. He said, no, this is something I was always looking for, so I will continue. You know, he was like preaching and associating with all the remaining devotees. And his father, he was thinking, what do I do? And he said, okay, he was thinking of some compromise. He said, let me give you some money and you buy yourself a separate house and a car and I'll give you enough for living comfortably. You don't have to work, you don't have to do nothing, just one condition. Stay away from the city. You know, buy yourself some property in the countryside and stay there. You know, like, I don't, you know, you're giving me bad name. And his son agreed, so he gave him a lot of money. He was a rich man, of course. And guess what happened? With this money, his son bought a property, big land and a house, few cows, and I think he bought two or three cars with this money. And this big house became first farming community in the whole former Soviet Union. He made it, you know, he turned it into farming community. And the cars were used for preaching and book distribution. So in effect what happened, that same man who imprisoned devotees, you know, he gave first the nation to help develop the movement. And later on, you know, he admitted, he said, you know, I think that devotees are nice people, so I made a mistake that I judged them, but, you know, what could I do? If I wouldn't do that, I would have to go to prison myself. But then he himself later became friend of devotees. So, and of course the very situation when devotees were in prison attracted a lot of attention from global media, because, you know, communists were so much in focus of America and other first world countries, capitalist countries, that whatever they were doing was immediately, you know, like publicized. And so devotees started petitioning governments, especially in here in America. President Reagan was in power at the time, to help release Soviet Hare Krishnas. And this campaign was very successful, and so devotees were actually released after a very short time. So devotees didn't have to stay in prison for very long, but by going through that kind of prosecution, they helped to popularize the movement on a global scale, up to the level of the governments and political leaders. So we can see that everything, whatever is happening, whether it's positive or negative, is actually within, you know, Krishna's plans. Krishna has his plans for everything. And we can see that on general scale, and also we can see that on the scale of our own lives individually, that we may think sometimes, oh, this is good or this is bad, but eventually it's Krishna's plan. You know, Krishna has plan for everything. And he is arranging things purposefully to help other people to become Krishna conscious. Like I remember, I was distributing books in Russia, and it was a winter time, and I was distributing at the parking lot next to one supermarket. And there was one family. I was going around the cars offering people Prabhupada's books, and there was one family. They were standing around their car, and the man was trying to fix the engine. The engine wouldn't start, and it was really cold. So, and they were all very nervous that, you know, they're staying in the cold and the car doesn't start. And somehow, you know, probably I was not supposed to do that, but, you know, I just came up to that man who was like nervously trying to fix his engine, and I offered him Prabhupada book. And that was Krishna book. I remember that vividly even now. And he looked at me and he was a little bit annoyed. He said, you know, what this book will do to me, you know. I said, you know, this book is not different from the Lord. It can do anything. And he looked at me again and he said, if this book would help me to fix the engine of my car, then I would consider buying it. And I was thinking, you know, of course it wouldn't happen, but I said, if Lord wants it, anything can happen. And guess what? He did something with his engine, and in half second it started. And he looked at me shocked. And he said, what was that book you were offering? Can I see that a little bit closer? And he purchased it. Because he just couldn't believe it. And, you know, one other time I was doing book distribution, and I came to one man and I offered him a book, and he kind of jumped away from me and he said, don't come to me, don't come close with these books. I said, what happened, you know, why do you react so strongly? And he said, these are dangerous books, I know. This is dangerous cult, don't come near. I said, what happened? You had some bad experience? Of course, yes. He said, yes, I had very bad experience. And at that time, we were organizing like little street festivals, not only like chanting, but we would do little drama and interaction with people, joking with people, and, you know, Indian dance and giving them some prasad, etc. And so he was going, that man, he was going somewhere, that was downtown, central part of the city, and he was going and he had business appointment, and he was a little early for his appointment, and so he was passing by our performance. And he looked, he was thinking, well, what these Hare Krishnas are doing, let me watch. I still, you know, have little extra time. And he was staying and watching, and watching, and staying and watching, and watching, and then he looked at his watch, and he was 1 hour late for his business appointment. And he said, I just lost track of time. I just saw you guys, you know, on the street. I was just curious. I completely forgot, you know, about time. 1 hour passed like 1 minute. I didn't even notice that. So I think if I will purchase this book and I will read this book, my whole life will pass in 1 second. I won't even notice that. Like that. But then I said, you know, it's very good because, you know, apparently you were happy when you were watching that show. So if you will read this book, you'll be happy your whole life. And, you know, he purchased the book eventually. But anyway, that the other time we were also taking part in celebration in the central part of the city. It was a city anniversary. And they had their own show and we were part of it. We were also doing a few things like drama, etc. And at the end, and yeah, we had special attraction, few gigantic cakes. Each cake was, you know, quite a few hundred pounds weight, and we were distributing these huge cakes. You know, people were curious, you know, how a cake can be that big. Anyway, we had a lot of prasadam for onlookers. And then at the end we were doing kirtan. And all the people, they were kind of roaming around, looking at different events, but they were not really, you know, like, entertained. But then they really liked our chanting party, and they all gathered, like, thousands upon thousands of people. They just gathered around us, and we were like a couple of hundred devotees doing chanting. And of course, you know, we had so many people taking interest, and devotees were very enthusiastic, and they were going on and on. And then, you know, it was late. It was maybe 10 o'clock at night or something like that. And then we decided that we have to go home. But then people were protesting. They were saying, no, you should not go home. You know, you are the only guys who make the festival worthwhile to attend. You should carry on with your chanting. And I said, okay, let's chant for a little more. So we chanted another half an hour. And we wanted to go home, but the people were saying, no, we want you to chant more. We're not satisfied yet. And I said, okay, if you want us, because we were like tired, and I challenged them. I said, if you want us to chant, you have to chant with us. You have to learn this song and chant it along with us. And they said, okay, teach us the words. So I quickly taught them Hare Krishna mantra, and believe it or not, all of them started chanting. And, you know, like, it was such a tremendous kirtan, thousands of people chanting in unison. And anyway, we chanted for another 40 minutes or so, but then devotees were really exhausted. And I said, okay, you know, we really have to go now. And they said, no, you have to stay. And I was thinking, you know, like, I have to get rid of these people, you know, somehow. And I told them, we will only chant if each and every one of you will dance, you know, when we chant. And they said, yeah, we'll do that. And they all started dancing. It was even more ecstatic, so we chanted for another half an hour. And then all the devotees were, you know, like, it was around 12, even like past 12, midnight. And I said, you know, I'm really sorry, but, you know, we are kind of spiritual people. We are monks, because we had many brahmacharis at the group. And so we take early rest because we have to rise very early. And so we have to go home and take rest. And then, you know, they were telling us that if you want to go home, we're going to come with us. You know, we're going to come with you. We'll just follow you. You can't go away from us. And then I was just telling the devotees, you know, we should not entertain these people anymore. We should just go home because it's too late. And they were a little drunk, but anyway. So we started going, and I was thinking, you know, just few people will follow us, maybe. And so we were going and chanting, but when I looked back, I saw that practically the whole, you know, like, big city square, thousands of people, and they were all following us. And, you know, it just wouldn't stop. And then I told devotees, you know, we have to run. And so we started running, and, you know, somehow we escaped. So this shows that, you know, that, people are very interested in Krishna consciousness, and that means potentially they can all become devotees, and therefore Srila Prabhupada was saying that this is our main duty, to give Krishna consciousness to the people, because it is changing their lives. And we know so many cases of people, I know personally, who had serious problems in their lives, like serious drug addiction or something, and doctor would give up on them altogether. But then when they would become devotees, you know, they would just drop all their bad habits. So it's obviously helping people so much, and that's why Srila Prabhupada was saying that this is the greatest form of compassion, to spread Krishna consciousness and give other people opportunity to also have this fortune to be connected with Krishna. So we'll stop here because there are many things we can say about it, but I'm sure that all of you are hungry by now, and so there is prasadam waiting, right? So next part of the program is Bhagavat Prasadam. So thank you very much, but if you want to ask anything, or if you want to talk to me personally, I'm available. I'm here for you. But we will conclude here. Thank you. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Bhagavad Gita ki jai. Gaur Premanandi. Hare Krishna.